There is a scandal from the La Clásica. I was like, what? I thought you were going to add to it.
There was a scandal. Yeah.
No, there's a scandal in El Clásico.
We here!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the 6 Yard Box Podcast. This is episode 97.
97?
97.
I thought we were 96.
Wow. Last week was 96, 95 and 96. Today is 97, and we are on the countdown to episode 100. Uh-huh. I think episode 100 will either be our preview or our review of the Champions League final.
Which would be crazy.
Which would be crazy.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be like the week after that. I want episode 100 to be like a actual special where we just focus on past episodes. But anyways, we're going to cross that bridge when we cross that bridge. Anyways, me, myself, I'm here joined by the lovely Antoine.
Hello.
We're delivering a little two-man edition of the pod today where we're going over the latest in Premier League, El Clasico, a little bit of Serie A, et cetera, et cetera. No Champions League action to review, unfortunately, but we're still in the fallout of that, of course, and we're now in the lead-up towards the Europa League and Champions League finals. How's your experience been watching footy this weekend?
This weekend? Look, guys, I am on a two-week streak of watching Como.
Loser.
And I'm loving it. I'm loving it. 6 games out of 6-1, and Cesc Fabregas' team look like they're playing the best football they've ever played, so I'm not complaining over here. I watched PSG beat Montpellier 4-1 in a game that did not matter because PSG are champions and Montpellier are already relegated. And I also watched, obviously, the El Clasico. Mm. A little bit of Premier League games here and there. Mm. Napoli-Genoa as well. Dabbled in there.
You gotta educate me a little bit on Serie A because
bro.
I have been uninformed.
Of course, bro. Now the title race is back on, let me tell you.
It's back on?
Well, it was on, but now it's on.
Okay.
Like, now we're putting the volume up. Like, it's on. Like,
I need to ask, how is Lyon doing? Because if they don't finish a certain position, then they're still threatened by relegation, no?
No. They didn't need to make Champions League. They just need to sell some players, which will happen in the summer.
Okay.
For their provisional relegation. This weekend, they played against Monaco. They needed to win to keep their hopes alive of playing Champions League football.
Right.
They were seventh going into the game. It's very tight. Between seventh and second, it was very tight. I think it was like 3-4 points in between there. And they lost 2-0 to Monaco. So now that the hopes of playing Champions League are completely dead, there's still European hopes for Conference League and Europa League.
Mm.
But in Ligue 1 this weekend, we discovered all the teams that will be playing Champions League. We have PSG, Marseille, and Monaco. Marseille and Monaco who clinched Champions League this weekend. There's a fourth that could play. They qualified to like a playoff.
Mm.
But that we'll know later on.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Also saw a very important game in Liga Portugal.
Did we?
Between Benfica and Sporting. It was 1-1, which probably means Sporting are going to win the title.
And I can imagine you're not too happy with that, Julian.
No, I'm really not.
Uh-huh.
They went 1-0 up, though we were dominating at home. Artacoglu eventually got the equalizer. And in the final game, because there's only one game left in Portugal, Sporting are playing, I think, Vitória Guimarães. And we're playing.
Again? I thought you played them a couple weeks ago.
I know. I don't know what's happening there with the scheduling.
Okay.
But we're playing Braga. So we both have. Ooh,
that's
not
a good team.
We both don't have easy games, but the chances that we win and they don't is pretty low at this point, I'd say.
So are we talking like you had the game on the TV, like undivided attention on the Sporting?
Yeah. Not on the TV.
Okay.
You know how I work?
I don't.
It's probably on here.
Oh.
It's probably on a certain website.
Can you mirror it to the TV, no?
I can.
Yeah.
I can, but
for the bigger experience.
Yeah. I mean, I usually have it on in the background as like I'm working or something. Mm. Like,
okay.
Anyways, my Saturday was ruined.
I'm sure it was. When you texted us, Saturday is ruined. Sporting are champions. I just ignored it. We're not doing this right now, Julian. We are not getting into this bullshit talk of you being a fake Benfica fan.
Shut the fuck up, man. Get out of here.
Hey, at least you still have passion for the sport. Unlike
a certain Blake.
A certain someone.
Who, I mean, couldn't make it to Paw today because he's watching his dog.
Of course. Shout out to Blake's dog.
Shout out Blake's dog.
But
I would have brought it here.
Yeah.
I would have brought it here. We could watch the dog here.
Exactly.
Exactly. Would have given Corey some attention.
100%.
Anyways, yes, Blake could not make it today. He's probably also reeling from the Leafs' loss last night. I'm worried about the kid.
And the fact that Arsenal might finish fourth in a two-horse race?
Yeah.
He doesn't care about that.
He says he doesn't. He says it. There like, will be... I say I don't care about United finishing 15th, but deep down...
Oh, you care.
I care a little bit. I was actually talking to my dad a little bit, and he had genuine worry for Blake's well-being after listening to the last episode. And we know Blake. Like, we know how Blake works. Like, he'll be really sad, and then he'll be really happy. Yeah. Like, Blake is like a... Like, I mean this in the nice way as possible, but like a very emotional person, up and down. That means he's in touch with his feelings, and I think that makes you manlier than most people. Anyways, but most people watching will probably not know that about Blake, so I wanna just make clear that Blake is okay. He's not here has no correlation with him being sad about
it. Was he actually, like...
Look, I guess...
Concerned.
We may think differently because we know Blake very well, so we may think... Like, you know, we may see him sad and then very angry and then quiet again as, like, pretty normal for Blake. But, like, most people may not see that. So I want to make clear that Blake is okay.
Blake is okay.
He's not here because of his dog, not because he hates us now. Yeah. And he'll be back very soon for the next episode. Don't you worry.
And there's no bad blood.
Don't you worry. And there's zero fucking bad blood. Because
you could think that there might have been a little bit of bad
blood. We've had much worse arguments on this podcast. Yes, we have.
Like, Blake, we were yelling.
I still think the Ballon d'Or debate last year was the worst.
Was that between me and you?
That was between me, you, and Blake.
Was it?
Even Miles there a little bit at some point. That was the Haaland versus Messi debate.
I remember that, yeah.
Right before class
two.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
When we had to walk to class after that, and we were all dead quiet. Because we were all like, I can't believe you fucking think that.
That was good.
That was good. That's the best thing about us. We could want to rip each other's heads off, but then we'll move on to the next topic, and we know it's all love.
Yeah.
I just want to make that clear to our viewers. We are completely okay. Anyways, I still think this will be a good episode. We're just me being you and me, Antoine. We have a lot to go over, including Carlo Ancelotti officially going to Brazil, Xabi Alonso officially confirmed for Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. We can talk El Clasico. We can talk some big games in the Premier League, which we haven't been able to talk with much significance, like Forest choking against Leicester, like Newcastle beating Chelsea, United still being a little bit shit, Liverpool drawing against Arsenal. A lot shit in the Premier League.
Thank you.
I don't know how seriously to take it. We'll get onto that when we get onto that. Mm-hmm. A first little question I had to kind of spark off the conversation here, Antoine, is I wanted to get your opinion. Where would these teams finish in the Premier League?
Who? Oh, okay. You're going to name them?
Yes. What? Sorry. I just had to say the hook.
Okay.
Where does Barca
finish? You need me to give
I'm going to give you a club. I'm going to give you a foreign club. You tell me where they would finish in this Premier League.
You need me to give you an actual position, like a number.
Give me an actual position. Okay. Like how good they are compared to the Premier League, right? Barcelona.
First. They would win the Premier League. That. With the football they're playing this season, they would win the Premier League. Let's be honest here. Come on.
I agree. What about Real Madrid? Real Madrid could be like second. They could also be like seventh. I don't know.
This season. Are they making Europe? Oh, I don't know. No, the top five making Champions League.
Inter?
Now, okay, are these teams... Is Barcelona still in the league?
No.
Okay.
No.
Got you. Inter. Second. First or second?
I think?
Yeah, 100%. Their consistency throughout seasons is...
I agree. Now, this one's a little contentious. Where do you think PSG would finish? I think you'd be a little bit lower. I think you'd be like a fourth. This version of PSG does very well, but throughout the entire season, you had a very poor start.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think would be second or third, probably, just based off of the beginning of season that we had.
Yes.
Because it was looking shaky for a moment there.
Yeah. Where do you think Napoli would finish?
Wow.
I think Napoli do much worse.
You think so?
In a more physical league? I think they're filled with players who have... Like, I think Inter's biggest star, quote-unquote, is their system. Their system coming to the Prem would still work because that's what it is. I think they can plug in so many good good players, mid players, whatever. I think that system is still the star that nobody's able to figure out with Inter. Napoli are much more player-driven, player-carried by likes of... Romelu Lukaku, Scott McTominay, these are names that haven't really lit up the Premier League in their time.
But if you look at it from that standpoint, Romelu Lukaku has come back to his best form this season. He looks like a player that just by being on the pitch is very dangerous again. And that's kind of the player that we were seeing at Inter. Scott McTominay has transformed this game under Antonio Conte. And Antonio Conte is at the helm. Like, Antonio Conte is probably one of the best league managers that we've seen within last decade.
It's true.
He knows the league. He won the Premier League before. I would say top four. Top five.
I don't think they finish above Villa.
Look at this. Look at the seasons that some of these Premier League.
I know. Some of these Premier League teams have. Would they have it in the Premier League? Like, Lukaku looked amazing at Inter, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. Then he came to Chelsea in the Prem and looked shit again.
Lukaku looked great for Inter under Antonio Conte. Lukaku looked shit at Chelsea, not under Antonio Conte. And he looked great again at Napoli under Antonio Conte. What does that tell you? Common denominator? Antonio Conte.
Antonio Conte, who also failed with Tottenham in the Premier League.
It's a different team.
I understand it's a different team. But I just don't see that translate to the Prem. I don't know. I don't see it as much with Inter because I think Serie A football is much, much different. I think Inter have proved that their system can work outside of Serie A because look what they're doing in the Champions League. But I don't know. I don't know about the other teams around them.
Okay.
Genuinely, I don't.
And so you're saying like Napoli would lose against the mid-table teams much more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that Corey? Corey's at the door. It's okay. Last one is Bayern.
Bayern this season? Am I crazy for saying like top 6-7?
Yeah.
Am I?
No, I agree.
Okay.
I think Harry Kane in the Premier League is Harry Kane. Yeah. But Bayern, I don't know. I don't know how to think about Bayern. I don't know how to think about Bayern. Well, Olise as well.
Their domination in the German league cannot be ignored. They're always the best team because of they just know how to manage their performances throughout an entire season. But this season specifically, I think there's individual players in that team that kind of bring the team down a little bit. I think of Leroy Sané, not great.
Yeah.
There's Alphonso Davies who was injured. They have a lot of injuries as well. Their goalkeeper isn't Manuel Neuer. Like, there's a lot of factors in this Bayern team that makes me think that they wouldn't do as well in the Premier League, such as the injuries, such as the players not being the best at their positions.
Yeah.
It's not the same level of Bayern that we were seeing in the previous years. Like, Bayern used to have the best in class. Sure, they're German champions. There's no disregarding that. They've been the best team in Germany this year, reached a Champions League quarterfinal, almost made it to the semifinals. But when you look at the players and the individualities, the team just, I don't know. And I still have my gripes with the company a little
trepidations.
Bit.
Trepidations. Yeah.
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 Still a little bit unsure of company's tactics.
I agree. Okay. I just want to ask that question because we always have a talk about how much better the Premier League is. And
hey, all these teams would do well.
I think they do well. I don't think they're having anywhere near the same success.
Is this you telling me that we need a Super League?
No. No, 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 no.
Why not, bro? One season. One season.
No.
Who says no?
I say no.
Not me.
I mean, it depends. If it's like if it's a UEFA organized, like, one time Champions League replacement for like the 100th year anniversary, whatever the fuck, and it's just a one time thing, then sure, maybe I can get behind it. If the Premier League, Serie A, all the domestic leagues were in accordance with it, sure, whatever. I don't think they would ever be, but sure, whatever.
Uh-huh.
I think, but like, as like an every year thing, I don't really think so. Plus, we kind of got that with the league stage at this point.
Yeah, I guess. It's like a mini sample of what it would be, right?
Sure. Anyways, just wanted to start off that little conversation.
I like that.
There.
I like that little question there.
I like starting off the episode with that. I think we used to do it more. Maybe we turn that into a...
We need to talk about something.
Oh.
Your flourishment as a host.
Top notch. No, I don't agree.
Top notch.
The only thing is...
When you look at Julian Betancourt at the beginning of this podcast, it was great, but he wasn't lead host. To come in and do a job and do a great job every single time, I have to commend you for that.
I've been a little poor the last couple of weeks, I have to say. Because I haven't produced.
Well, I haven't noticed it, so.
Well, Thursday.
What happened Thursday?
What happened Thursday is I set my alarm for 8 a.m.
Okay, no, I'm talking about...
I sleep past my alarm, and then at 10:30, I get woken up by hearing Blake's laugh downstairs. I'm like, I'm all frazzled. What? I fucking woke up after these guys arrived at my place. I was so embarrassed. I had no time to produce. I came in all frazzled, and I don't think I was at my best last episode. Sure, I can still talk, but I'm not leading like I want to, you know?
Okay, but hey, I haven't noticed it, so.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. But I feel much more comfortable in this chair when I have like my notes ready.
And your monster.
And I'm ready. And my monster, bro. I've been missing my monster. I had to take two coffees this morning because I'm missing my monster.
Wow.
I know that's embarrassing. There's three empty mugs right over there. Anyways, we're like 15 minutes in. Let's get to El Clasico.
Let's do it.
Let's get to El Clasico. Barcelona 4, Real Madrid 3. And wow. I mean, once again, El Clasico has delivered for the neutrals. What a game. I think everybody is happy with this result except for Real Madrid fans because that hurts.
Oof.
That really hurts.
Has this El Clasico been the most impactful, do you think, out of all of them?
No, I don't think it's the biggest statement. I think the biggest statement by far this season is, I mean, the Copa del Rey is an actual fucking trophy. That's a hell of a statement.
But the first one.
The first
one hurts.
The 4-0 yeah. at the Bernabeu. That's humbling. Meaning Mal dancing on your ass is bad.
That's true.
So I'd still give it to that one. This one, I don't think we could be as shocked at because Barca have literally had their number all season long.
In context, though, Julian, you're leading 2-0.
Yes. This is bad from Real Madrid.
To concede 4 goals.
This is the one that hurt the minutes. Most. For Real Madrid.
Because, look.
La Liga on the line, pretty much.
Exactly. For Real Madrid, there was something to be done there. You're playing a Barcelona who mentally are challenged because they just lost against Inter.
You had a week's rest.
Exactly. You had a week's rest. Physically, the players are probably not at their best because they just played 120 minutes against Inter Milan.
Yep.
You had to win this game. And there was a chance that you could win this game. There was a serious chance. Even though Barcelona has been the better team over this season, this game specifically, you could have done something. And you capitalized for 20 minutes when Barcelona still looked like they were kind of traumatized by the Inter tie, wasn't playing their best football. But then, oh my goodness, just absolutely get thrown around for the rest of the game, I want to say.
Yeah.
You have opportunities in the second half, but ultimately, Barcelona's domination is prevalent.
100%, dude. 100%. I think this is a lot on Carlo Ancelotti and his kind of lack of system, kind of lack of structure, because as we've seen so much in past weeks, yes, Barca can score loads of goals, but they can see loads of goals too. And I just feel like if you have a basic structure and setup and a decent plan to go into games with against Barcelona, then Inter Milan have proved that you could beat them at their own game. They're very gettable if you have a decent structure to get in behind that high line. And Real Madrid did that.
Yeah, it worked well.
A lot. But then there's just no finishing, first of all. Real Madrid had chances to make it 4-4 and even go ahead in this game even more. But just a lack of composure and a lack of setup and so many mistakes to let Barca back in this game.
Yeah. A lot of individual mistakes in this game.
Lots of individual mistakes.
Lucas Vasquez.
Yeah, I think even on the first goal, the Eric Garcia coverage is horrendous. Mm-hmm. That's very bad corner defending.
Yep.
But it's a Lucas Vasquez mistake that's the worst of the bunch.
Kind of sums it up, right, as a season for Real Madrid.
It really does.
I mean, you can blame Carlo Ancelotti, and I think you should throughout the entire season.
100%.
But for this game specifically, although it wasn't a great performance, I don't think you can put all the blame on him. I think he made the decision, the hard decisions that we wanted him to make throughout the season. He started Arda Güler.
Yep.
He started Bellingham as a 10, as we wanted to. You're kind of limited with the players that you have, especially on the back line. You're playing Fran Garcia, who isn't your left back because Ferland Mendy's injured. You're playing Tchouaméni at center back.
Yep.
He's not a center back. But I think this loss is more on the players than on the coach.
I would agree, but I think we have to have serious conversations about what's went wrong this season for Real Madrid, and especially against Barcelona this season. I mean, just to put in perspective a little bit, Barca have scored 16 goals in 4 games this season against Real Madrid. That's more goals than Madrid have in their last 9 matches. And that's not 9 matches against Barcelona. That's 9 matches including Osasuna, including the Arsenal tie, of course, including La Liga games where they should be thrashing teams with the talent they have. But Barca, in 4 games against Real Madrid, are averaging 4 goals a game against them.
Wow.
Mental. Really embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. Obviously, as a whole season, you need to blame Carlo Ancelotti.
Yes.
But also, why weren't you blaming Carlo Ancelotti in previous seasons when the football was kind of the same? It was the same. Last season, you were depending on a Toni Kroos to save you. It's the reality of things. If Toni Kroos is not in that midfield, which we saw this season, that Real Madrid team last season doesn't get anywhere near the Champions League final.
Yeah.
I remember against Leipzig, they were struggling for most of that tie, and there's a real chance that they go out.
Yep.
But they don't. Why? Because the midfield is solid because Toni Kroos is there. This season, he's not there. There's a problem.
Yeah.
I think that problem should have been addressed much sooner. Much sooner than now. You see their downfall, and it looks very bad.
It does. It looks horrendous. And, I mean, there are definitely a lot of topics to get into about this game. And I think this is just like, I think this is Real Madrid being found out. I think they did not replace Toni Kroos efficiently in the summer. And I think just all of Carlo Ancelotti's tenure here has been, especially in the front line, it's been a lot of go out there and express yourself, lads. Mm. And when you have so much talent, it's almost too much talent. And there's almost no system that you could even apply there, which is another reason why I'm worried for Xabi Alonso next year. Someone else we have to talk about is Rodrigo.
Yeah.
He got 0 minutes in this game.
Has the ship sailed?
Has the ship sailed with Rodrigo? I think with Xabi Alonso coming next year, I'd be very worried for him.
I think so too.
Because I've been looking a lot at what does the team look like? Where do players fit in? And I'm not seeing a place for Rodrigo in this team.
And especially after seeing that Xabi Alonso came out and said, I don't know if he said it, but there's rumors that he really, really likes Arda Güler's profile.
Yeah.
That makes it a lot harder for Rodrigo because
100%.
Arda Güler operates exactly in that area 100%. That Rodrigo would be operating 100%. In. So,
genuinely, I still think Rodrigo is a very underutilized player at Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. I think his talents are a lot closer to Vinny's than we even say. And I think his play style and his ability to play fast football is actually much more suited to Xabi's system over a Vinicius Jr. That's a bit of a hot take.
Okay.
But I've been looking a lot into what the system of Xabi Alonso will demand. A lot of that is fast football that Arda Güler will be perfect in. But it really worries me about like a Kylian Mbappe probably up top where he's done his best football with a partner. I think he's done his best football when he has a traditional number nine next to him, like a Cavani, like a Giroud, etc. Like
Benzema in the French national team.
Exactly. I mean, not really. I mean, Benzema hasn't been there.
Yeah. I mean, when he was there.
He was there in that 1 year.
Nations League and the 1 yes. Euros. I remember yes. the partnership was good.
I forgot
there.
About that. Yeah. No. And I he's never had that really at Real Madrid. I think that's been one of his downfalls. Actually, speaking of Mbappe, he's got 38 goals this season for Real Madrid, which is the most ever of a Real Madrid debutant. But I think if you don't include penalties, it's one of his worst goal-scoring seasons.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean,
a lot of pens this year.
We were talking about this. We'll get back to Xabi Alonso, but we were talking about this, how this season now should be his goal, Mbappe's goal should be to win the Pichichi.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's going to come to fruition. It looks like it's going to happen.
He'll probably get there.
So can you really judge this Mbappe season as a failure? Probably on less of a scale than you would if he didn't win that trophy.
Yeah.
But I think all things considered, you go into a Real Madrid team who have just won a Champions League. You go into a Real Madrid team that needs... Actually, they didn't really need you. But that want to be better attacking-wise. And you would be that main outlet. And it hasn't worked out. So can you judge this Mbappe season as a failure? Maybe a little bit, but not as much of a failure as we would judge it if he hadn't won the top goal scorer award.
I completely agree. And I think he'll look at it as a failure, obviously, because Real Madrid have failed this year.
Yeah.
That's no fucking debate. They failed massively this year. It makes me excited though for Xabi Alonso next year. I will be very interested in what happens because we got the here we go today, just a couple of hours ago, that Xabi Alonso is going to Real Madrid. The rumors are finally over. There are also rumors that he's going to be there for the Club World Cup,
which would be crazy. Him and Trent.
I would love to see him and Trent there.
It would bring a whole different dynamic to the Club World Cup. It
brings a whole new excitement to the Club World Cup.
Because remember, the City too, who have Rodri back for the Club World Cup.
Do they? Mm-hmm. I thought he was still going to be gone.
I'm pretty sure he's back.
Interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see how seriously clubs take it. I think Real Madrid are the only ones that I'm seeing a lot of excitement from them about the Club World Cup.
I think everyone's going to take it as serious as it is.
I think the prize pool makes it. You have to take it seriously.
Yeah. And the fact that it's once every 4 years, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's much different than... I think the owners care a lot about it. Mm-hmm. But will the coaches and the players care a lot about it?
Well, if the owner cares about it, then the club and the players and the managers have to care about it. Or else the owner's not going to be happy. And what happens when the owner's not happy? Shit changes.
Well, if the entire playing staff is not happy, then what can you do as an owner? You can tell them to care about it, but come on.
Why shouldn't they care about it?
Why shouldn't they care about it? Because they've been complaining for years about being overworked.
Okay.
I'm not saying that I don't care about the Club World Cup or saying that they shouldn't care about it. I'm just playing devil's advocate here as to a reason why they wouldn't, right? Mm-hmm. It's just extra competition. It's the same reason why they wouldn't like going to their national team right after the season ends. It's the same reason why Newcastle didn't like going to Australia right after last season finished to play Brighton in a postseason friendly.
That doesn't matter. That's a problem. But I don't see players complaining about going to their national teams when it's a Euros tournament or a Copa America or a World Cup. So why should it be different here?
Exactly. What the Club World Cup needs is to establish importance.
Exactly.
And right now the Club World Cup doesn't have importance. That's just the fact of the matter. The Club World Cup in its old format of a yearly competition where, you know, the Champions League winner is not really going to face real threat is not an important competition. Mm-hmm. It's not seen as that.
100%.
So maybe this does something different, obviously, but it has to be taken seriously by the players. I'm just saying that, like, with all the complaints about too much football, this is probably the last thing that some of them want.
Yeah.
I hope they care about it because I want to be entertained. And FIFA really wants this. And I think it will be really good for football if we have this extra competition doing very, very well to bring publicity to football in the North America.
Exactly. And the teams that we don't usually see in the scene. Like, tell me you're watching that. No one has watched one Mexican team play football this year. No disrespect
to
them. I'm excited for that. I'm excited
to
see Estevao for the first time, who's going to Chelsea next season.
Yes.
But he's going to have a chance to prove himself at Palmeiras for the Club World Cup. Like, there's so many factors this season or within this Club World Cup that are very exciting and that promise it to be something huge.
Yes. In a good format, because like you could say that same thing about Corinthians in the normal Club World Cup. But did I say no, Palmeiras in the normal Club World Cup. But not this one, right?
Yeah.
So we'll do our research, we'll do our due diligence, and if anybody
we're bringing content during
the Club World 100%. Cup. Like, don't get me wrong. I just really hope that the players and staff take it seriously enough.
Yeah.
And that it's not just like a, you know.
But it's looking like they will, so
I really hope they do.
There's no problem with that.
I really hope they do.
Let's go back to El Clasico.
Let's go back to El Clasico. I want to talk a little bit about what Xabi Alonso's team is going to look like.
Sure.
All right. I think it's heavily reported by Marca that he's going to play a 3-4-3.
Okay. Which is what he was playing at.
Which is what he's been playing his entire managerial career, which is pretty novel for Real Madrid.
What do you mean?
It's new.
Okay.
Real Madrid's not used to playing a 3-4-3.
Of course.
And kind of been looking into what the team will look like. And I have to say, I'm
yeah? You like what you're seeing?
I'm liking what I'm seeing. If they bring in Trent, he'll be like a Grimaldo on the right. Right? Like, he'll play that kind of like inverted kind of role where he's heavily involved in the buildup, kind of making underlapping runs and really inverting into the midfield, right? And being a big creator, helping out the two pivots, right? And then they want to bring in probably a left back. They really need a left back.
They need a left back. They need a center back or two.
Yep.
They need a midfielder or two.
Yes. I think left back before the Club World Cup should be a priority. And I think someone like a Lucas Hernandez will look very good
there. Theo Hernandez?
Theo
Hernandez. I was going to say,
definitely not Lucas Hernandez.
Lucas is staying over here.
God, why am I so tired, bro? Someone like a Theo Hernandez would work perfectly there in kind of like frimpong role where he's basically an attacker, very heavy crosser of the ball,
or
very impactful and build up from wide.
Another possibility, why don't you just bring Grimaldo with you?
That's another possibility.
Because let's be honest, that Bayer Leverkusen team will get demolished this season. Like, in terms of players leaving.
You think?
I think so.
Does Wirtz leave?
I think Wirtz leaves. I mean, there's not what manager comes in and restores the project that they have and gives hope to the fans that the following years will look like the years that we just had, the last 2 years that we've had under Xabi Alonso. I don't think there's that incentive for the players to stay at this club because primarily of Xabi Alonso leaving. And because players want a new challenge, I think. They've conquered the Bundesliga. They've reached a Champions League round of 16. And I think that's kind of the ceiling that this team can can have at the moment with this kind of with this squad.
You're probably right.
Especially now that Xabi Alonso is leaving. Yeah. I don't see this team going. I might be wrong, but I don't see this team doing well in the Champions League next season. I don't see them going far.
Yeah.
And that'll primarily be because a lot of players are going to leave.
Yeah. We've seen Jonathan Tah linked with Barcelona. Was it
Barcelona?
Was it? Yeah, I know Jonathan Tah is pretty much leaving already.
There's a lot of players. There's a lot of teams that can get a lot of these players, and that would be a great deal for them.
Yeah. Frimpong to Liverpool.
Frimpong.
Yeah.
Grimaldo is one of them.
Grimaldo could leave. He's getting up there in age anyways.
Virta's definitely going to go, I think.
Where does he go?
Look, there's a part of me that thinks he's going to Manchester City.
God, please no.
Just a small part of me, I think he's replacing De Bruyne there.
Yeah, I could. I mean, like, he's not a De Bruyne.
No, he's not.
He's not a De Bruyne.
But De Bruyne is leaving. You need something or someone to replace him.
He's much closer
to
a Foden.
Yeah.
They already have a Foden.
They do.
Also, how greedy, bro.
How greedy. I'm so excited, by the way, for this for Foden to come back to his normal self, and every hater in the world that's been bashing him for being shit, just bite their words.
I don't want him to come back to his normal self because I don't like him.
You don't like him?
Well, I mean, he's very entertaining to watch. Okay, don't get me wrong.
How can you not like Phil Foden?
Because he's city scum and I'm United till I die. Fair but enough. Like, that's it. He's very entertaining to watch. Like, I'll give you that.
But a lot of people,
fucking Foden is
exactly.
Scary.
A lot of people forgot how good he was.
Yes,
it's like,
I agree.
Bro, like, everyone thinks he's shit now. He just had a bad season.
Yeah, that's it. You could have off seasons like that for Guardiola, and it's so annoying, bro. Mm-hmm. He'll come back next year and just turn back up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's
go back to Xabi. So, yeah, it'll be a back three. Probably, we're saying Asensio. We're saying Rudiger. And we're saying, you probably bring in a center back anyways. I don't know about Eder Militao, bro.
Really?
I don't know about Eder Militao.
Is he just injury prone? Or
in big 2026, we're talking about Eder Militao?
Of course we are. Are we not? He was probably their best center back. One or two years ago,
he literally came back for one game this season, then got injured again.
Yeah, it's just
you can't rely on our middle
tower,
bro.
Of course,
I think they sign a center back. You know my prediction?
Mm?
Dean Huijsen.
I don't mind it. They're linked with William Saliba as well.
You need a ball player.
Yeah,
you need one
of those two.
Yeah, you need center backs that are comfortable on the ball and comfortable giving out some line breaking passes. If you pair that up with a Trent, and then an attacking wing back, that's a scary scary back five.
Yeah, I'm telling you, once this team has an identity, it will be very scary.
You could play, I don't know about Tchouaméni in this team.
Really?
I think if Tchouaméni does well under Xabi Alonso, it'll be as a center back.
Wow.
I think you need to be very good in possession,
mm-hmm.
I find.
Yeah.
He is not very quick on the ball in terms of decision making. I don't think he's very good with his in the pivot in terms of like distributing. He's a great destroyer.
Okay.
He's great. Like, I think he's a decent six, but I think he's way better in a three than in a two. I wouldn't trust him in a two. I'd have Valverde in the two, obviously, and I'd either bring in another one or you put Bellingham there. I think the most important thing to Xabi Alonso is quick vertical playmaking, and you need players that are really good under press to do that.
Is Granit Xhaka that player that comes to mind then? Like, you're telling me Granit Xhaka was that quick player that can distribute passes and have quick decision making?
He was.
Tchouaméni is.
He was in there.
Tchouaméni is a great player.
He is a great player.
Maybe he doesn't fit the system because he's more of a defensive midfielder, but I don't think his work on the ball, when he has the ball, when he's in possession, I don't think it's as bad as you're making it out to be.
Maybe I am overdoing it a little bit. I'm only relaying what I've heard from certain Real Madrid fans and certain like kind of people in the know that know tactic. Like,
right.
This is the Tactico's opinion here. I have to say, I don't always like the Tactico's opinion, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think they need to sign depth in that position anyways. I wouldn't put like, Modric is obviously not going to be good in that position. I think he needs to leave Real Madrid anyways. Is he not already? I don't know. Is he confirmed? Modric, is he leaving? Is that confirmed?
I mean, why keep him at this point?
Yeah, Exactly. Yeah. You need to sign an 8 or a 6 or somebody playing that position anyways.
Could Arda Güler play there?
I don't think he...
No?
I think he's way better fit in like a 10, like as a, like a yeah. playmaker. Could a Fabian Ruiz signing...
Perhaps.
Do well.
After he lifts the Champions League?
Lifts the Champions League.
I will forever...
Says... Fuck the PSG fans. You don't. You didn't know what you had. I'm off to Madrid now.
No. I know he feels very loved now. Everyone's praising him. Yeah.
I mean, I understand it.
The biggest problem with the Xabi Alonso team, I think, is going to be the attackers defending. We were talking about this earlier.
That's the thing, dude. I don't know if I see
an Mbappe defending the same way that someone else would defend under Xabi Alonso. I don't know if... He didn't do it at PSG. He doesn't do it for the French national team. Yeah. This is a guy that runs 8 kilometers a game. That's not a lot at all.
Yeah.
And you're going to ask him to press high, to defend with your team.
Yes.
It's like the new age of football requires every single player to be involved off the ball. I don't think Mbappe is as involved as he should be.
You're right.
And I think his ego is getting in the way of that. Because
especially if he's on the field with Vinicius.
Exactly.
Then... It's a bad match.
Him and Vinicius defending. Wow. If I see that next season, then wow. That might be a miracle.
Yeah. And I think, obviously, Xabi Alonso commands respect in the dressing room. Mm-hmm. Obviously. But I'm really worried for him if, like, he comes in, he finds out really quickly that the superstars on this team are not as eager to deliver the system that he wants. Not really up to the standard in the commitment sense. Mm-hmm. And... he really struggles to get a good start at Real Madrid, and that just snowballs into a really bad season. And we're here in 12 months, and it's turned out to be a nightmare. I'm worried for Xabi Alonso with that. When was the last time Real Madrid had played a 3-4-3? Ever?
Ever, yeah.
I don't know. And I don't know how many of these players are used to it. Going from Carlo Ancelotti tactics to Xabi Alonso tactics is a rude awakening. And at the very least, at best, they're going to need an adjustment period. And can Real Madrid afford an adjustment period? I'm worried that they can't.
It's a great point.
On the flip side, I think Xabi Alonso is a fantastic manager. I think for Real Madrid especially, he'll be a good man manager.
Yeah.
But you got to be a good man manager quick. And I think he has a tactics to deliver. But can these players, will the players be up to listen to the tactics?
Well, I think they will. There's that sense of authority that he comes with because he's played for Real Madrid during their best years.
I agree.
Like he's a Real Madrid legend as a player.
Yes.
Why wouldn't he get the respect as a manager?
Let's say in 12 months' time, him and Mbappe are at odds. They both go to Florentino Perez and they're both complaining about the other. Mm. Which side does Florentino Perez take?
I think he takes Xabi Alonso's side.
You think?
Yeah. I think so. You don't?
If it's Mbappe by himself, sure. If it's Mbappe and Vinny,
maybe. I don't know. It's just you can't not respect a guy like that coming into your team.
You can't.
As the manager, you can't disrespect it.
You cannot. But they might.
They might.
They might though. I'm really worried about. Mm-hmm. It could go really well. It could also go really badly next year.
100%.
I think either way, El Clasico is going to be so fun.
Oh, yeah. For the next couple of years, we have a hell of an El Clasico. To
100%.
To, like, the entire games throughout the season where Barcelona will be playing against Real Madrid, even beyond next season.
Yes.
For the next, like, 10 years, we're set. Like, we're good.
Yes, bro. I want to read out this tweet that I saw from one Real Madrid fan about Xabi Alonso's chances. I think he's a Real Madrid fan, but anyways, about Xabi Alonso and Real Madrid's chances against Barcelona in the El Clasico next year. Tell me what you think of this. All I'm going to say is Xabi Alonso is going to massacre Barca next season. Their high line is food if you have basic structure, and Inzaghi went 120 minutes against them with a much weaker squad in transition and was only behind for 15 minutes, scored 7. It won't just be wins for Real Madrid and Xabi Alonso. It'll be utter domination.
I don't think so. I don't think so because Barcelona's only going to get better from here This is the same Barcelona team as last year, let's remember. There's only been like one or two additions, and Dani Olmo and Inigo Martinez, who was a great La Liga center back, but no one thought he would adapt to this Barcelona back line as well as he did.
Yep.
So this Barcelona team is also going to go only up from here, and I think that their football will be the most dominant in the world. If it wasn't already this year, then it will be in the next couple of years, 100%. You're telling me a Pedri isn't going to elevate his game even further? I mean, he's still very, very young. Frankie de Jong looks like he's back to his normal self, or even better than the Frankie de Jong that we were seeing a couple of years ago. That front line is devastating. They're going to get a striker. I don't think it will be dominant from Real Madrid at all. I think it'll be very close if Xabi Alonso is able to instill his tactics in the squad fairly quickly, like you said.
Yeah.
But dominance and embarrassment, he used the word embarrassment in there, or thrashing, what was it?
Dominance, yeah.
That's, I mean, domination. Come on, lad. What are we doing?
Yeah. I would tend to agree. I don't see the quick turnaround, but in all fairness, I did not see this quick of a turnaround for Barcelona under Hansi Flick. Mm-hmm. So I guess we can never know until we get there, right?
100%.
I do still maintain that with a basic structure and a decent setup and a know-how to beat Barcelona, teams can thrash them. Teams can score a lot against them.
I mean, Inter only beat Barcelona. Well, they didn't only beat Barcelona because of this, but a big part of why they beat Barcelona and why they beat that back line is because they didn't have Koundé or Balde, who are instrumental to aligning themselves for that offside trap. Point. And it's a big, they're big pieces in Hansi Flick's puzzle in terms of how Barcelona play off the ball and how they operate defensively.
Mm. That's a good point as well. I mean, we're gonna be fed good in those games. Oh, as neutrals, those are going to be some entertaining ass games, I have to say. Barcelona and Real Madrid, that fixture now is looking much better than it did 12 months ago.
Yeah.
Miles better.
Even this season, man. All the El Clásicos has been amazing.
100%.
How many legendary games have Barcelona given us this season? Let's go through them.
You want to go through it?
You have the two ties against Inter.
Yeah.
Damn near all the El Clásicos have been spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Atletico Madrid 4-4, I remember, in the first leg of the Copa del Rey.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
They just beat Celta Vigo 4-3 after coming back.
A couple of 6-0, 7-0 wins in there.
100%. Was there?
7-1, I think. There was one.
Really?
Yeah, they've bagged.
Yeah, a lot of thrashings in there.
Yeah.
Benfica.
Yes.
In the league phase.
Yes.
I mean,
that was a crazy game.
There are so many games that they've been like, it's just been a movie this season for Barcelona. It's been a movie, and they're not going to lift the Champions League, but I think everybody can agree that Barcelona this season have been the most entertaining team.
100%.
Just because of what they've provided for the fans, for neutrals, which is a really big part in how you view them as a team. They've been the most entertaining team this season.
I completely agree.
Glad you do.
Yeah, they beat Valencia 7-1 this season.
Wow.
In January.
Wow.
Just insane. Yeah, a lot of like 5-0s, 6-0s in here. It's fucking insane.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's just that attack is just so like, it's so fun to watch.
You know what? Tell me if this is, they also beat Valladolid 7-0.
Wow.
In August. Is this too much glaze? I was watching Lamine Yamal highlights from when he was 13 last night.
13? And what were they
13
like?
13 when he was playing with like U16s.
Okay.
Just insane.
Really?
Just insane. Like,
if Blake was here, well, he'd be having a field day with
you. He'd be like,
yeah. No, this is what he would do. He'd go like this. It's always the mic moving. When he moves the mic away, you know you got to him. You know you got to him. Yeah. But it was a good performance, his 13-year-old performance.
Unreal performance.
Really, eh?
I mean, there's a reason he made his debut at 15. Mm. We'll just say that.
Okay.
War player, man. I was even watching some highlights from when he played like his first ever game for Barca when he was like in preseason when he was 15.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just crazy. Lamine, man. War player.
I'm telling you. 15 years. Just wait. It'll be good.
I'm really scared he'll get injured, bro. I'm really scared Barca will run him into the ground.
You think so?
I'm scared, bro.
See
that video of him taking the picture for the tourist?
Yeah, the Ryan one? What?
Yeah,
give context.
So
give
funny,
context.
Bro.
Give context.
So funny. So I don't know where he was, but there was like, I think they're French speaking.
They were French.
Yeah. It was like a big group of people just like just coincidentally ran to Lamine Yamal and his guys and just asked them to take a picture of the group, not knowing that this is like the best footballer in the world taking their picture, right? Mm-hmm. Hands them the phone, and then one girl pops up from the crowd and goes like, "What's your name? What's your name?" And then he goes, "Ryan."
Ryan, bro.
What? And they're all like, "C'est Lamine Yamal.
C'est Lamine Yamal." Did you see what he posted after the El Clasico win?
No, what did he say?
So on Instagram, he posted obviously the his celebrations to the goal and the celebrations of the team after they beat Real Madrid 4-3. The caption: "Ryan vaccinated them."
Vaccinated them?
It's a Spanish expression, basically, like Ryan
lost,
killed.
See,
them.
Lost in translation, bro.
Stop. We have to get into that.
Get into that.
There is a scandal from the El Clasico. I was like, what? I thought you were going to add to it.
There was a scandal. Go on.
No, there's a scandal in El Clasico. So in the game, it was supposed to be 5-3. Fermin Lopez scores a last-minute goal.
What a goal.
What a goal. Great goal to make it 5-3. However, the VAR checks it, and there was a handball in the buildup. So they chalk it off.
But rightfully, I think.
Rightfully so. Yeah, obviously. But after the game, there is a video of one of the VAR members, basically they're recorded throughout the entire the entirety of the match.
Of course,
the audio is recorded, the video is recorded. So after the game, there's the video recording comes out of the VAR team, and one of them, when reviewing the Fermin Lopez goal, when he sees that the ball strikes his hand, he says "menos mal," which basically translates to "thank goodness." And now it feeds into the narrative that Real Madrid have been favored by the referees in El Clasicos this season. I remember the Copa del Rey El Clasico. If we want to talk about this El Clasico specifically, Tchouaméni should have been sent off early in the game.
Yeah.
The ref probably should have given a penalty
to
Real Madrid
because
of the Tchouaméni handball. 100%. There are many situations in this game that you can look at and say Barca are kind of done dirty there.
Yeah.
Real Madrid are kind of getting lucky there. The ref kind of helped them there.
Yeah. I mean, I think I see it. I obviously see a lot of decisions that go Real Madrid's way. I think it may have been lost in translation there. Maybe. Because we don't speak Spanish. We don't know, like, if thank goodness can be used in different contexts there.
Yeah.
If you say thank goodness, we know what that means. If someone in Spain says it, then, like, I don't know what that means. Like, you just brought up the Lamine Yamal point where you said Ryan vaccinated them. Like, what the fuck does that mean? But in Spanish, I'm sure it makes perfect sense.
Right.
But things get lost in translation. I wouldn't be so quick to think, like, oh, they're open about it now, hating on Barcelona.
Well,
I think he may have a bias. But if he does have a bias, I don't think he just let it leak there. If I'm Barcelona,
I need explanations. Yeah? I need explanations, even though you win the game. I mean, the audacity for Real Madrid to complain about referees, if this is true, is ridiculous.
Yeah. I think if the refs are truly on Madrid's side, that Copa del Rey ref is getting changed. You know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that ref is getting changed. Or that ref is not assigned there from the start.
Mm.
I don't think there's much credence to it, but I do like the theory.
I
love the theory as well. I wouldn't be surprised if in like 30 years, like there's like some breakout report and we find out that like the football today was like super rigged.
You think so?
Bro, I was talking about this with like American sports, UFC, whatever the hell, like with the pace that sports betting is growing right now, I would not be surprised if so much of like sports nowadays is just like just a little fixed.
That's crazy.
Or just a little like done really well, done so like no, only like one player playing or even no players playing know that the fix is in, but that there's like something going on behind the scenes.
Mm.
Or that, like, lines are getting changed just to influence bets or whatever the fuck.
See, I don't even want to think of that reality because it's going to ruin it for me.
Because, exactly, it ruins the thing. Like, I remember making my video a couple years ago on match fixing. And the biggest point that struck me was, like, everything that we ever know about match fixing is only the incompetent parts.
Right.
The only reason we know about so-and-so referee against one team is because he was an idiot and leaked and it to it a obvious. Friend or was recorded without knowing or just let it slip or was fucking
David Coot
high with a bunch of university students like David Coot was.
Yeah.
Those are the dumbasses that we know about. How many smart refs are out there?
True.
That may be under the influence with their own bias maybe or, you know, with a vested interest in having a team doing well but are just smart to not tell anybody. Or how much of previous football was like that? Is it like that today? I don't know. Yeah.
It's a great point you make.
It's a great point. Anyways, I don't have an inherent thing against sports betting, but I just we love a theory here at the Six Yard Box Podcast. We love a theory.
Well, we've done a couple theories here. And remember the Ballon d'Or one, the list?
That still strikes me. You want to talk about a theory? That still is very sus to me. Do I agree with Real Madrid boycotting the event? No, but I don't think they would have if the reason wasn't valid.
Fair enough.
I do think that morning Vinny was supposed to win it.
Let's move on.
Anyways, I want to talk about Barcelona just a tiny, tiny bit because I want to get into their summer, what it could look like.
Yep.
Their biggest thing is, will they sign a striker?
I think that they need to sign a striker.
If they do sign a striker, how much are they spending on said striker?
Why not? Why not break the bank a little bit? Why not?
Why not bring in like an Isak or Gyökeres? But can they is the question.
Fuck, after that Travis Scott collab, fuck.
What a collab, by the way.
Yeah.
What a collab.
What a collab.
We got to get our hands on some of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Somehow, some way.
That, like, that
those creators that actually got invited to the Montjuic.
Was that the concert the day before? I saw that.
There was a concert, I think, the day of.
The day of?
I think there was a concert after the game. Or really? The day before. I don't know. Maybe two concerts. The day before. But no, some people got invited to watch the game, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fair play, man. That's where we got to get.
Yeah. We will. Man. We will.
I'm sure we will. Or, like, just get, like, a little fake of it. You know what I mean? Like, what? Just get, like a replica of the...
Oh, of the kit.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro, of course.
Or, like, one of the sweaters or something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, retail, that shit is crazy.
Yeah, that shit is expensive as hell.
Anyways. Yeah, I think they should. I wouldn't trust Lewandowski next season. Not because I don't think he'll do well, but just because I wouldn't trust the injury record of someone like that going up against Real Madrid in the league.
Well, I mean, they're not really trusting him right now. So what do you think? What makes you?
Well, I certainly wouldn't trust Ferran Torres.
Exactly. Exactly. That's can't, the main you one. You need an out-and-out striker who can get on the end of those Lamine Yamal crosses. Mm-hmm. I think if Barcelona get a striker next season, Lamine Yamal's output will go up fucking to the roof.
Think
bro.
Of that, dude.
It will go up to the moon. Because the amount of assists that are pinpoint, if a striker was there to put his head on it, a prolific striker scores that every day of the year. Lamine Yamal next season could have damn near 20 assists. In La Liga, if they sign a striker.
I did not even think about that, bro. That could be insane. Fuck, man. If they sign Victor Gyökeres, then damn.
I think Blake said Arsenal's getting him though.
If I was a betting man, I would still say Arsenal get him.
Really?
I think Arsenal just go all out for signings this summer.
As they should.
Speaking of, this could be a good little transition here. Unless there's anything else to talk about.
No, I'm good.
Really. Does Rodrigo leave Real Madrid in the summer?
Yes.
Yes. I think so too. Where does he go?
Where does he go? Wow.
Oh well, my God, if he goes to Arsenal.
Yeah. PSG?
How fucking greedy, bro.
What?
You're fine.
Yeah, we're fine, but hey, we need those players that.
Doué, Vara, Dembele, and Rodrigo.
Yeah.
So what? One of them just hugging the bench all season?
No. Look, with the system that Enrique plays.
I know, it's very interchangeable.
You need the players that can... Because he doesn't... It looks like Luis Enrique wants to stick to that false nine thing, which I'm not complaining. No one's complaining about. With the system that he plays, you need the players that are competent enough to play in that role and interchange, like you said, with Dembele. If he's not feeling well, I think Rodrigo can put in a nice shift at the center forward position or the false nine position. Then he can go on the right. Doué comes into the false nine. We just need that flow of players that are so versatile in attack. And I think Rodrigo fits that profile very well.
I'd fucking hate that.
How greedy, though.
How greedy. That'd be insane. You saw Barcola developing.
That's true.
That means Barcola's leaving then, if that happens.
I don't want
Which I'm sure you wouldn't mind because...
Oh, what? Well, you're telling me how...
Would you sell Barcola to bring in Rodrigo?
No.
Okay, never mind then.
No, I don't think.
I stand corrected.
If Barcola leaves, then Rodrigo... If Barcola leaves for Rodrigo, I'm upset. I'm upset. Because one, I think Barcola has a lot of development to do still at the club, and I think he can bring a lot.
Yeah.
Everyone's forgetting the beginning of season that Barcola had. If there's a reason why we're still in the Champions League, it's because Barcola was putting in those performances for us when we were shit at the beginning of the season, when we weren't delivering in the big performances. He was there. And the second point is I also think it kind of goes against signing superstars.
That's true.
For PSG. Although yeah. I think we should still get him. Or I think this is something it's something to do for PSG. Like, it's an option to consider. If you get rid of Bakura at the same time, then you're kind of bringing in a superstar and getting rid of someone that can be great. It's you're kind of bringing back that ego thing.
But if you do bring in Rodrigo while keeping Barcola, that kills Barcola's development.
Yeah, that's true.
Because where is he going to get minutes?
Fair enough.
You know what I mean? Anyways.
Arsenal then.
Zubimendi is here. We go to Arsenal. What do we think of it?
I like it. I
love this for Arsenal.
It's really good for them.
I think
the biggest thing, obviously the striker is the biggest thing.
Yes.
But you needed someone to replace Thomas Partey.
Yes.
I don't think Blake didn't want Partey to go, right?
He didn't want Partey to go. Like, I mean, he's okay with Partey staying as depth, I'm sure. Yeah. I just think they need to sell outright because I wouldn't trust the injury record. I wouldn't trust the silly mistakes that he's prone to making. Mm-hmm. And kind of the off-field stuff is not something you want.
Yeah.
Like, you laugh, but, like,
It is true.
You don't want that. You definitely don't want
100%.
That. I think this is spectacular. If he's going to sit in the six, you allow Declan Rice to play with a little bit more freedom. Mm-hmm. Odegaard complimenting them. I think that's a fantastic midfield. Like, automatically, this makes them one of the best midfields in the world if they're able to get it together. But once, like you said, number one, first and foremost, is that striker.
Yeah, if they need to, they can't just stick with Zubimendi for the summer and we're done. No,
yeah.
Like, you need the striker.
Yeah.
Like, Arsenal fans who can, like, they can be hopeful, they can be happy with the signing, 100%.
Yeah.
But let's not forget that the main priority this season is to get a striker, because
absolutely.
That's what you absolutely need.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is...
And a left winger.
And, yeah. And you need to make a statement signing still. Zubimendi, like, is fantastic, don't get me wrong, but you want to make a statement this summer, mm-hmm. and this is not a statement as much as it's a foregone conclusion that we've known since January.
Yeah.
Right? Sign a Gokeres or an Isak or Sesko, one of those. And teams are scared of you for next year.
100%.
Does Isak leave this summer?
No. I don't think so. I think the project that Newcastle offers is much more valuable than a lot of teams.
What if Barca calls?
Maybe. If Barca calls, man, you can't really.
You can't say no to that.
You can't say no to that. Playing with the best player in the world, you can't say no to that.
You really can't.
But... In terms of Premier League teams, I'm not sure he looks at a lot of teams and thinks, yeah, maybe I'd have a better time there.
Yeah.
I think Newcastle's project is really exciting.
You hear they're changing their badge?
I did. You don't like it?
You know what? Every time one of these like classic clubs says they're changing their badge, then I get a little, I don't like that. Then I actually took a look at Newcastle's badge and I'm like,
shit.
That does look a little 1980.
Yeah.
We could do with a refresh. I don't want them to just go big. Like, I don't want them to have like a city rebrand. Yeah. I think I love City's old logo. I think they butchered it still.
Same with Villa when they changed logos and then went back. That's circle.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
I don't think they go circular. If you go circular, you can't go circular.
You cannot go circular.
Do something with the horse. It's a horse, right?
Yeah.
Do something with that. I think you do something with that.
Yeah. Keep the general shape. Just clean up some lines, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Just
like we were talking about,
freshen it up.
We're talking about like graphic designers of the 1970s here.
Yeah, exactly.
Now
just give it a refresh, not a rebrand.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Give it like, who had a really good logo redesign lately? I can't think of many teams.
Not many teams.
Genuinely. Inter's,
I don't really like
Inter's
Juve's one.
Terrible. Fiorentina's terrible.
I don't like Juve's one.
Maybe Brentford. Brentford had a big glow up in their badge.
True.
Who else is there?
PSG's one is low-key kind of better, I can't lie.
You're going back there. You're
I mean,
going
not
back.
Really.
When did they redo their badge?
That's a great question. But not, like, it was past the 2000s.
Yeah, it was past the 2000s.
Yeah, 100%.
But I'm thinking, like, post 2015.
Oh.
Juve's. Oh, yeah, God.
I don't like it at all.
The worst badge. Generally the worst badge in football.
It's disgusting.
Disgusting.
Like, the old badge had so much... Like, we're throwing this word around, but the old badge had so much aura, bro.
No, genuinely.
It had, like...
Yes. Like, even this one...
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
It's miles clearer than the current logo.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're thinking. That's just...
The J, bro.
That is way... Yes. Like, outside of anything they've ever done, I don't understand that 100%, one.
Yeah.
Inter's, I think, is even worse.
I don't understand.
I don't mind Inter's.
I actually don't.
The gold on their logo with the star was
just... Yeah, like, it was iconic. 100%.
It was iconic.
But it doesn't look horrible the same way that the Juve one looks horrible.
What's a good logo rebrand lately?
Let me search them up.
Any in France?
Yeah, I think Nîmes had one. I think Reims had one.
Mm. In England, there's been...
Yeah, the Stade de Reims one is really good.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, Reims' new logo is good. Look up English ones. Like, I'm blanking here. But especially the Italian ones have been shite in the past couple of years. I think they need to go back to the old logos. But anyways, this is a bit of an old tangent. But Newcastle, please don't butcher this, is all I'm going to say.
West Ham. That's good. That's a good one.
West Ham was a good one. And they paired it up with also moving into a new stadium at the same time. Yeah. So it was good. It was good.
Spurs, Chelsea.
This was the old that Chelsea one. Yeah, I mean, that was old, though. Like, that would happen a long time ago. But that was a good...
Loki, Arsenal had one, too.
Fresh. Again, you're going back.
2002.
Yeah, you're going back a lot. I think that's a good brand refresh as well. Mm-hmm. Even United in the early 2000s. Like, they changed their badge early. Or in the 90s or something. Anyways. Yeah. Don't fuck it up. Anyways. shall we go Arsenal a little bit more? I want to talk about their game against Liverpool.
Sure.
A tight game. Not that impactful if you don't care about where you're going to finish as Arsenal. You're probably going to get Champions League. Unless you lose to Southampton in the next 2 weeks.
No, it's mathematically...
Is it?
I think so. No. Maybe not. Maybe Forrest are still in.
Then we'll get on to. Miles was in attendance for this game.
Yeah.
Watched Arsenal give Liverpool a guard of honor.
Participated
in the guard of honor. Yeah. That was funny. Witnessed Nicolas Jover live.
Bro, it's so embarrassing, bro.
Yeah, I know. I think the biggest talking point of this game was Trent coming on and getting booed.
Yeah. I think my opinion has changed on that a little bit.
Why?
Just a little bit. Because I kind of started relating it to my team. Like, if Zaire Emery wins the Champions League this season and decides to leave to, like, a Madrid.
A team that's, like, beat you time and time again. That's the thing with Trent. I mean, it'd be like if Saka won the Prem with Arsenal. It's like, yippee. But then if he went to City after that, it's like, what the fuck are you doing, lad? Fair. Even though it would be a quote-unquote better career move for him, that, like, you'd be fucking over the fans. And you'd be questioned because you're supposed to be a fan yourself because you spent your whole lives at Arsenal. Then, like...
100%. Like,
That's why it's so bad.
Was editing that clip. And, you know, like, when you edit, like, you have to rewatch it over and over again. Like, every time I rewatched it, I was like, this is a poor take. It's a poor take for me.
Yeah?
I was like, I think I said Liverpool fans should be happy for him.
They
really shouldn't.
Yeah. And you can't tell Liverpool fans how to feel exactly about this, because I would feel slighted too. It's not just the fact that he's going to Real Madrid, who they lost to years and years and years over.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that he's leaving for free. It's the fact that he could have just signed a renewal, said I wanted to leave, but you can take 50 mil for me to go to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
You know, that's not crazy for Madrid to spend. Everybody wins. But he's been delaying and delaying and delaying, and we've known for like a year he wants to go to Madrid. And it's really casted a dark cloud on this whole season for Liverpool.
So are the boos justified?
I think the boos are justified.
You think so?
I think, look, in a couple of years, you let bygones be bygones, and Trent gets the necessary credit that he should get as being one of Liverpool's best players of all time. But right now, you can't hate on Liverpool fans for booing.
Yeah, fair.
For booing this guy that's 100%. Like, you know, like, sure, taking the right career move, we could say, but also stabbing them in the back. Let's call a spade a spade. He is. It's not like he's not going to a Bayern Munich.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to a, you know, a, in that much. He's not going that much of like an outside rival, because Liverpool and Real Madrid do have a recent history against each other and probably will if Liverpool want to be competing for the Champions League year in, year out. So in that sense, it's like I completely understand. Mm-hmm. The main bit of criticism I would put is on Arne Slot here for even putting Trent on the field in the first place.
Yeah,
or even putting him in the squad.
That's true.
Why? Like, you don't need it at that point. Like, you're bringing on an attacking fullback when you're 2-0 up or 2-1 up, whatever it may have been. I don't understand it.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm not sure he really cared about the boos Arne Slot did. Like, he just really wanted to, I guess, improve the team in the game.
Obviously. But I just...
Are we seriously going to criticize Arne Slot for this?
I think so.
Come on.
Like, no, like, not crazily, like, oh, he's overrated because he brought on Trent. I'm not jumping the gun here, obviously. But, like, a mistake is a mistake. Correct. Like, I just don't think you need to bring Trent on there. Yeah. In a game of this little importance, to Liverpool especially. It's like...
When the title's already sealed. And you have nothing to play for.
Exactly.
Sure. I see where you're coming from.
Exactly. Okay. Let's shift gears a little bit. Newcastle could snatch second place from Arsenal.
Yeah.
But let's talk about their game against Chelsea. A dominant performance by Newcastle, where they could have won by a lot more than 2-0 at St. James's Park. Nicholas Jackson stole the headlines in this game. Elbowing a Newcastle player in the face going up for a header. He got a red card, and his season is done now.
It is?
He now has
his time at Chelsea should be done, too.
You think so?
Yeah.
He now has more cards than goals for Chelsea in 2025.
Wow.
That is... Wow.
Are Chelsea in the Club World Cup? No, right?
I think so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. For winning the Champions League back in the day.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think.
Well, then maybe his time at the club is not done because he'll be playing that.
I guess.
But his time in the Premier League.
His time in the Premier League Chelsea. Should be done. For I don't know Chelsea. Where he goes.
Yeah.
But...
Man, Sandro Tonali, bro. Oh, that's a player I'd love at PSG.
Yeah?
That's a player I'll take.
Real Madrid come knocking.
Oh, dude, he's taking it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know he 100% takes it.
100%.
I don't know how he does it. How do you think he does that?
At Real Madrid? Under Xabi Alonso? I think he does well. I mean, I don't see where he wouldn't. He's just that player that on the ball is always so electric. Even off the ball, he's very electric. He's that player that kind of like João Neves in the way that he'll initiate that press for the team, and he'll be annoying for other teams. And in the midfield this season, there hardly has been teams that have dominated Newcastle. A big part of that is because Sandro Tonali is there. Obviously, his partnership with Bruno Guimarães is massive, but Tonali, he's a great player to have in your midfield, and you don't complain when you have Tonali.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see if they bring in any midfielders, how they would fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Camavinga could cook as well for Real Madrid.
Yeah, I was going to bring him up when you were saying who should play in that midfield. I don't know why you did mention him there.
Yeah, he could as well. Forgotten man, I guess. Stick him at left back all season. Anyways. Chelsea didn't look great in this game. They'll probably still finish Champions League.
I mean, this Champions League race is... I mean, if it wasn't hot enough, it's heating up even more.
That's true. I mean, maybe not still.
Because between seventh and third, you have four points.
You know, Chelsea have as many wins this season as Arsenal.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They do.
Too many draws.
Newcastle have more wins than Arsenal this year.
What?
And City.
Wow. That's crazy, man.
Nottingham Forest has the same amount of wins as Arsenal.
So many draws.
Same with Aston Villa.
So many draws.
Yeah, what the hell? 14 draws. That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. So what we're saying, Liverpool, Arsenal, City, and Newcastle.
You want to do these small, the small prediction for the
end of the season? You want to predict top four? Give me top four right now.
You go first.
I mean, or should we say top five?
Okay, let's do top five.
Top five?
Yeah. Liverpool. Go.
Arsenal.
You go. Okay.
Arsenal takes second,
okay.
I think.
Okay.
Then it's Newcastle, then City, then Villa.
My turn?
Go on.
Liverpool, Newcastle, Arsenal, City, Chelsea. Newcastle play Arsenal next week.
Arsenal play Southampton as well.
Yeah, but Newcastle, in my logic, Newcastle beat Arsenal next week.
Yep.
Away from home.
Away from home.
And then they win their last game against Everton.
Winnable.
Winnable.
I don't think they win.
You don't think they beat Arsenal?
At the Emirates, I don't think so.
Okay.
Miles will be there.
Will he? Oh, you know he's going to be there.
I don't know, but I can see it.
Yeah. Why do they have a club friendly on the July 27th?
Do you see what I mean? Like, yeah, what are we doing here?
Some bullshit.
What are we doing here? Like, some. Anyways, let's talk a little bit about Forest. They drew 2-2 against Leicester. This has confirmed them for Europe, but they are actively choking the UCL here, Antoine. Leicester, obviously, we know confirmed for relegation, but they scored two cheap goals. I think it was Milenkovic and Olaena kind of getting mixed up, letting Buonanotte score the second goal after a beautiful couple of goals involving Morgan Gibbs-White, I have to say. I don't know if you've seen the goals, but they are fucking fantastic.
Hey, Morgan Gibbs-White played a very good game.
Another man linked to City.
I wouldn't mind it.
I wouldn't
mind it. In a Pep system, I wouldn't mind it at all.
I think you would cook, yeah.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't mind it.
Okay, yeah.
But I would mind it. The big conversation about this game is, what do we think about the Nottingham Forest owner coming onto the pitch and quote-unquote confronting Nuno?
Yeah, he looked pretty heated, but after the game, he came out and said that he was just mad because of Taiwo Awoniyi's availability or something.
Yeah.
Something like that. So he tried, I guess in that letter after the game, he tried to calm the fans down.
Yeah.
But he looked pretty mad.
He looked pretty mad. And like, I have one gripe with this, and it's with Gary Neville.
Yeah.
Gary Neville after the game goes, oh, if I was Nuno, I would be handing in my resignation tonight. What a disgusting act from the owner. Oh my God. The lack of self-awareness here is crazy. Mm. When he is involved in the project to get the new United Stadium built for the Glazers, who is part of the ownership, who even in the past year has kept the debt, sacked half our workforce, and has made bad decision after bad decision, and has not attended a regular United game in who knows how long. Have you seen what's been going on with the United staff not getting any tickets to the Europa League?
No, but I know that the PSG staff is going and the Tottenham staff is going as well.
So PSG, for reference, are sending 600 employees to Munich. Spurs are sending 700 to Bilbao. Mm-hmm. This is a normal thing that clubs do. Just a perk of the job, working as an everyday staff member of a big team. This is normal, run of the road, but not for United. Mm-hmm. Not only have they sacked off half their workforce in the past year, they canceled a Christmas party just to save costs, but United are holding a small ballot with a small number of tickets available for their staff. So they could win tickets.
Oh, wow.
Maybe a couple dozen. I don't fucking know. For the majority of staff, they are hosting a screening in Manchester with an open invite to plus ones. The Daily Mail understands the member of staff will be given 2 free drink vouchers.
Oh, wow.
While their guests will have to pay for theirs.
But hey, the 2 free drinks, that's generous. That's generous.
We are Manchester United, Antoine. We are Manchester United. Again, the article goes on to say, before the arrival of Sir Jim Ratcliffe, United had a workforce of around 1,140. 2 rounds of redundancies are expected to bring around 450 job losses. This is coming after the Red Devils canceled their annual Christmas party for staff. The situation over tickets reported by Center Devils has triggered many of the United workforce. Spurs are taking a much different approach. They've gone out of their way to invite over 700 employees to the game.
The difference in how these clubs are led is insane.
This is such a small cost cutting measure. The amount this will save the team is pennies. Mm. Compared to there's so many better ways to go about this, right? And it's such a small saving that has such big repercussions.
Yeah.
on your staff, bro. That's what you're going to impact. After so many of the staff already there, it's probably lost a friend or two due to redundancies. Can't even go to the game anymore. Couldn't even have a fucking Christmas party a couple months back. Like, you know how depressing it must be to work for Man United as somebody that's been there for years and years and years, and you can't even get this. And there's so many better ways to go about making money for the team. And literally all you have to do is just sell a Victor Lindelof in the summer. And you're saving 10 times the amount.
More than, yeah.
You know, like, it's so unbearable, bro. It's so unbearable. And then that's what really ticked me off about the Gary Neville thing, about hating on the Forest owner, is that you are in bed with owners that have done so much worse. And you're going out of your way to hate on an owner that has spent money for the club and has shown visible passion week in, week out for that team doing well. They are in Europe for the first time since their glory days, for the first time in decades. This is a massive accomplishment, even if they don't get European football. And you're finding a way to hate on it. That is crazy to me. Another week, another Gary Neville disaster class. I digress.
He's been chaining them lately, yeah?
Oh, my God. These legends, bro. Like, him.
Rio.
Paul Scholes. This, the class of 92 has been pissing me off.
There's also Wesley Schneider, I think, who talks shit about Lamine Yamal or something like that.
I don't even... Like, these old guys... You think as, like, an old legend of a club, you would want your old club to be doing really well. And I think that is the case with, like, a Rio. He can be annoying at times, but you can tell on commentary, bias or not, he wants United to do well.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Paul Scholes in the studio at halftime. And this man is... United are 3-0 up at halftime against Bilbao. And this man is... Yeah, I mean, I thought they looked really nervous in the first 15 minutes. The first 15 minutes was an absolute disgrace.
It was, though, to be fair. It was, Julian.
But he won't talk about the next 30. We look the best fucking team in the world, Antoine. That's my problem here. He's so salty about us showing any little bit of promise. I think genuinely, if we go back to the pinnacle of United doing well, of winning Premier Leagues and Champions League, then he'll be a salty little bastard about it.
Yeah.
I think there's a little part of him and Gary Neville that is low-key happy that United will only be remembered for success they brought. Not the success of new players. Fuck that.
You think so?
Success that they brought. I think there's that little egotistical part of them.
No.
That has that. I think so.
There's no way.
I think so. I think it brings them joy to think that, I will always be associated with success of United. United success will always be associated with me.
Mm.
I'm United. I am that. No one's rewriting history and rewriting United success over me. I am United
success.
There's
no way.
I'm telling you.
There's no way.
Footballers don't think like us. Footballers don't.
But he's also a fan of the club. He obviously wants to see them succeed.
He's a fan of the club. But former players think differently. They do.
I don't know if he thinks like
that. And they have their own motives and everything.
Yeah.
Like, if I left my dodgeball team.
Uh-oh.
And I found out they didn't win the title next year after three-peating with me. Not saying I'm the reason we three-peated, but but if they lost the championship the year after I left, a tiny part of me would go.
Yeah, you need me.
Yeah.
You think that's what Mbappe was going to think with PSG?
100%. Yeah. 100%. Oh, these Luis Enrique and Nasser Al-Khelaifi think that they'll be better without me. Better without Kylian Mbappe. Better without the best player in the world. Yeah, we'll see how they do.
Mm. Champions League winners.
That's bothering him. I'm telling you, that's bothering him. Even though he's a PSG fan, maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, that's bothering him.
Maybe.
No.
It's a good way to look at it. I don't know.
No.
But the United legends have been having stinkers under there when they do punditry.
They have been. They're also just not interesting people.
You don't think so?
Paul Scholes, Michael Owen.
Michael
Owen's okay.
What?
No, he's not.
You don't think his analysis is...
No, it's terrible. Really? It's terrible. And he's so monotone and brings no excitement. Never has ever looked excited to be on a broadcast talking about United except when we lost. He was so he was in on Erik ten Hag. Like he was the first one in on Erik ten Hag when it wasn't cool to hate on Erik ten Hag. Right. And you could tell the bias was so there. Because he was also one of the last ones to turn on Ollie. Mm. I'm like, bro, come on. It's like just ones like that are annoy me so much. But anyways.
We should do a tier list of pundits.
Eddie Aluko.
Oh, we're going down. Oh, we're going down.
Bro, the football world, I think they hate on her too much, but they have reason to hate on her. Oh, I'll give
clips
you
out there, man. Holy.
Though there's bad clips out there.
I'm sure she, I don't watch her every week.
Yeah.
But I'm sure she has some kind of.
I'm sure she's better than the clips say. 100%.
But when there's a clip out there that. Well, which one? What's the funny one?
She has a disaster class out there, I have to say. I do also low-key think there's a little bit of fucking liberal Julian here. Mm. I do think there's a little sexism there.
Maybe. Actually, not maybe. Probably.
I know. 100%. Yeah. 100%.
100%.
Yeah.
But there's also good female pundits out there.
There are good female pundits out there. Great female pundits out there. But there are good female pundits out there that I've been watching like during the Euros, and I'll watch it with like a group of friends, and then every time she says something that they disagree with.
Oh.
Get this fucking girl off screen. Yeah. Like you.
Like, come on.
If they liberal say, Julian.
If they say if they say good stuff, then.
Yeah. Doesn't matter, does it? Don't get me wrong. There are girls in the industry that are there because of reasons not being their football know-how.
Right.
In any Aluko's case. I'm not arguing any wrongdoing. She used to be a footballer for England. That's probably right. In that case, yeah, sure, it makes sense. Anyways, weird
pundit tangent there.
But I think it's been a really good episode.
Yeah.
Is there anywhere else that we need to go?
I don't think so.
I'm going to give a quick check to Fab. And then if there's nothing, breaking news going on, then we could call this episode episode.
We had the Liga Awards yesterday.
How did the Liga?
Oh, let me tell you. You want to know the starting 11, sure. the best starting 11 in Liga.
Sure.
So basically, it's a team of the season. So okay. Liga team of the season according to the people in charge of Liga, I guess. You had Lucas Chevalier in goal, the Lille goalkeeper. Then you had a back line of Hakimi, Pacho, I think it was Marquinhos, Nuno Mendes. You had a midfield three of João Neves, Vitinha.
Is this fan voted?
No, it's actual. It's the people in charge. You had a midfield three of João Neves, Vitinha, and Ryan Cherki, I believe. And then you had a front three of, I'm pretty sure it was Doué, Dembélé, and Bakuna. I think, I'd have to double check it, but
how's Greenwood doing?
He's doing good. Heard from him he's in a doing while. Good. He's second top goal scorer in the league for Marseille. There was that period where he wasn't really delivering and. The fans in Marseille were kind of upset with him. You have to know, the fans in Marseille, they turn so, like, they are so impatient. Mm. They might be the most impatient fans in the world, where if you have a couple bad performances, you're cooked. There was a banner after a couple bad performances from Mason Greenwood that basically said, like, step it up or you're out or something like that, something along those lines. But he's been a serviceable guy for them this season. They made a winter signing that has been incredible, and it's Amine Gouiri. You know Gouiri?
No.
You don't know Gouiri? Played for Rennes, Algerian striker.
Oh yes.
I'm pretty sure he was linked with United for a little bit.
Yes,
I'm pretty sure he was linked.
I thought he was a winger.
No, he's a striker.
Okay.
And he came in Marseille in January, and he's been tearing it up. If I'm honest, he's been having a really really good campaign.
Where is Marseille in the league?
Second.
What? I've been hearing so much like distress about them this season. Like De Zerbi under pressure already.
There was it's in that period of time where they were drawing to a lot of teams. They were losing a couple games. But ultimately, they fought back, and they're second.
Okay.
Yeah.
One more thing I'll say, and then I want to hear one more thing from you. Little update from Fab. He just reposted something he posted a couple of days ago about Liverpool and Jeremy Frimpong, so there may be some movements around there that may be getting finalized in the next couple of days for around 35, 40 million euros. We have, speaking of Marseille, Luis Enrique.
Enrique going to Inter?
Lead with Inter. Four before the Club World Cup.
Okay.
Good signing?
Good signing.
Yeah.
He was really good for them in the beginning of the season. Hmm. Kind of fell off towards the mid, towards end season. Hmm. But if there's one manager in the world that can revitalize a player, that can make a player come back to his former self. I'm saying former self like he fell off a cliff, but he's still a very good player. It's Simone Inzaghi. He can do that.
Yeah. And then last thing is Hansi Flick being extended at Barcelona. A new deal, 2 years, expiring June 2027. Mm-hmm. Good man. How's Serie A doing?
I'm loving Serie A right now. I'm loving Serie A right now. More specifically, the title race, but the top four race is also very much alive. You have Lazio and Juve tied on 64 points for top four. But the title race is really interesting this year because you have Inter, who are in the Champions League final, and you don't know if they're going to rest their players. You don't know if they want to concede the Scudetto. Probably shouldn't, right? But looking at the starting 11, it almost seems like they are, but they're still winning games by starting their kind of second string players.
Yeah.
If you look at last game, I don't think they started Lautaro Martinez or Marcus Thuram. I think it was Taremi and Joaquin Correa up front.
Yeah.
But they still managed to win games. They beat Torino 2-0. And then yesterday, you had the Napoli-Genoa game, where if Napoli had won that game, they would be 3 points clear with two games left. Very good advantage for them. They ended up tying after Genoa scored two goals against them to equalize after 2-1.
Yeah.
So now it's a one point league. It's still in Napoli's hand, but you have Inter kind of creeping up. Inter could go trophyless this season, but they can also win two trophies. So it's very
we were just talking about treble.
Exactly.
About them as well.
Yeah. So I think it's the most entertaining title race of the season.
Nice. So that'll do it?
Yeah. I guess so.
Okay. Can't wait to get Naps on this episode, bro.
Yeah, dude. The Serie A correspondent. We need him.
The Serie A correspondent. I love that for him.
Yeah.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been yet another episode of the 6 Yard Box podcast. You see, like, it's just always better when I produce. It flows better. I'm not in, like, that middle stage of, like, so where do you want to go? Do you want to go here? Do you want to talk about? None of that. It flows better. I have my ideas ready. You have your ideas ready. I tell you beforehand what we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. And the thing just flows.
It's all about the preparation.
It's all about the preparation, man.
And once we have a team behind this, where you won't have to do that producing work anymore.
I like doing my producing
work. I know you don't. I won't lie.
But hey. Because then it also gets the points in my head.
Yeah, fair enough.
Without having like a cheat sheet.
But it'll just facilitate the whole process, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have an idea for that.
Okay.
Also not waking up at 10:30. Well, fair. Pulp as well.
That was me today, but it's okay.
You're fine. It gave me more time to prep.
1-1.
Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, this has been yet another episode of the 6 Yard Box podcast. This has been myself. This has been Antoine. If you are watching on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, comment, do all those YouTube things. If you're watching on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, give us a little 5-star rating if you don't mind. And let us know in that rating who you got for Serie A this year, Inter or Napoli. Who you got?
Napoli.
Inter, I guess.
Get watching.
I will start watching more.
Good.
Instead of Prime, I guess, because why am I watching Prime?
Exactly.
Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, this has been yet another episode of the 6 Yard Box podcast. And we will see you all next week. Goodbye.
See ya.
I didn't say we out.
Did you stop?
I didn't stop.
We out.
One more.
Oh, yeah. You know, go on. We're not cutting this.
No, we're not. No, we are.
No, we're not cutting around it. No.
We are cutting around it.
No, we're not cutting around it. Blake, don't cut around it. No, Blake. Just keep it rolling, Blake.
Let's keep it professional.
Keep it rolling, Blake. Go on.
We out.
See ya.
There you go. Fuck.